you for coming in today.
Yep.
Would you mind just saying your name and, if you don't mind, your date of birth, please?
My name's Peter Baldwin, and I was born on the 29th of the 12th, 44.
Thank you very much. So when did you attend the Harris, and what course did you do?
I attended the secondary tech, as we knew it then, from 1958 to 1960. And then I carried on up what was under current polytechnic from 1960 to about 65, 66.
Right. Mm. So when you were there in the late 50s, which were you at the technical school or what?
Yes, I was in the Harris building, yeah. Yeah, it was a separate exam that we took after the 11 plus, and we went to a completely different style of teaching to what I was used to and everything else, yeah.
Was it the entrance exam for...
Yeah.
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 And was it your primary school that had sort of told you about the Harris and suggested you do the...
No, I think it came either via my family or different things. It was one of these silly things. I lived in Fulwood at the time, but there was no schools, Catholic schools as far as my parents were concerned. So I had to go to one in Preston, which meant that when they sat the 11 plus, I sat my 11 plus in Preston with the rest of the class, and then had to go up to what is now Fulwood High School. It was Fulwood Secondary Modern in those days, on a Saturday to sit my 11 plus. I passed in one and failed in the other.
Right.
So I never got to go to that one, but my interest was in the technical side, always had been. And I said, right, let's do it. Somewhere or another, and I've been racking my brains, but I don't know exactly how it all happened. There was two other boys in the same class as me who were also interested in coming to the secondary tech. And they... along with me, ended up with a Mr. Allen as a form master, who not only backed us up with it, but also gave us extra tuition on what to expect from the exams and everything else. And all three of us passed. We did all right there.
So which school did you go to before the Harris?
English Martyrs Boys. They've pulled every school down bar the Harris that I've ever been to.
Have they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where are they going to put the blue plaque?
I've no idea. I've no idea. It'll have to go on the Harris.
So how old were you when you were at the Harris?
13 to, well, nearly 16. Yeah. Birthday's in December, so everything started in September at the time, so,
Did you like it at the Harris?
Yes. As I say, it was a completely different way of teaching altogether. You were treated like young adults. You know, you were responsible for yourself and the way you behaved and everything else. But, you could expect reprimands. But at the original school that I went to, they were still using the cane and the... everything else, it was a style at the time, just after the war and everything else, it all, yeah.
Do you think the teachers were strict at the Harris?
You wouldn't call it strict, but they got what they wanted. There was a Mr. Cheesebro who was a form master for the first year. He had a habit of throwing things at you, but generally it was a piece of chalk or something like that. But he was a decent enough guy when it come down to getting on with the work that you had to do and everything else. I mean, to say we all got homework. I've never done homework in my life before.
Right.
So, you know, that was, again, a complete change. It took a bit of time.
So after you'd done the initial 2 years, did you go straight into a higher level of class? In 1960?
No, I went into an engineering course.
All right.
I went to a I moved on to Ordinary National in engineering. I failed the first year. I don't know why, but I did. And the regulations within the company I was with was that you didn't get day release if you failed. So I had to come back to night school, three nights a week, for 12 months, on City and Guilds. And that was the only two options at the time, as I thought. I rumped it in one sense. I was getting results like 85 and 90% on things like that. So one of the lecturers that I knew said, you know, you shouldn't be in this. You're too good for it. I said, well, you know, I can't do the national. I've already failed that. And he said, we're running a new course called a technician course. And they allocated a code T1 to T5 for the references on the course. And they put me straight in at T2. And I never looked back. I was one of the six in the final year that passed the final exams. I think we started out with about 30-something in the class.
Yeah. And was that a full-time course, or was that when you were doing day release?
No, that's day release, that. Day release and two nights a week.
So one day a week, was it? And then you had to go in the evening as well?
Yeah. Tuesday evenings, all day Friday and Friday night.
Wow, Friday night.
We come to an agreement with the lecturer on Friday night. He also wanted to get on to his family. And it was just... We were in the phase then where some of the lecturers were not very keen on doing night schools. They wanted time for their own purposes. And I can't blame them for that, but we come back to a thing where we went into what's now the Foster building. Mm. And there was a refectory there. And we all dived in there at the end of the day release. Got some food down our necks, came out half an hour later and started about an hour or so sooner than we should have done, which meant that we was walking out of here around about 8 o'clock at night and the sun was only just across the road. Yeah.
So which company were you working for when you were doing the day release?
Well, it was English Electric originally. Oh, yeah. Then it became British Aircraft Corporation. And then it ended up as British Aerospace.
Right.
So I did 39 years there with them. So. Yeah.
And did they come to the Harris to kind of find people to employ to then?
Yeah.
You know, when you were 15.
Yeah, there was two or three major engineering companies and that actually came in and sort of. Give presentations and that. One was English Electric, the other one's Leyland Motors, and I think there was Gosses. British Nuclear Fuels might have, I can't remember, but they were noted for being good for apprenticeships. They did a good course at the time. Yeah. So
do you think the Harris helped you get that job then?
Oh well, yeah, it definitely led on to it and get to No problems with that,
So people from the companies would come in and sort of say, we're looking for people.
Yeah.
And but then you applied.
Then you had to apply, yeah. Okay. The two lads that
came from me, English Martyrs was Tony Ogden and John Davis. John Davis ended up at English Electric somewhere, and then I lost touch with him. And Tony Ogden, he carried on and did all levels. And then I heard that his family had moved somewhere up in Scotland. And the last I've heard of him, I've never met him since I left the Tech. Last I heard of him, he was living in London. And that information came from his cousin who lived round the corner from me. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's, yeah.
it's funny how you drift apart, you know. There was another lad called Bernard Tagg, who came to the Tech as far as I know, but he definitely was in the release from English Electric on their release, and that he ended up being my best man at my wedding. But I'd lost touch with him now. I don't know what happened, whether him and his wife had split up or what, but you know, one minute they was living in a particular house, and when I went past next time, it was, you know, somebody else living there.
Oh, right. So when you came to the house initially, where were you living at that time?
In the Harris. I was living in number 40 Robinson Street.
Right.
You have to be careful with that one. At that time, there were two Robinson Streets, one in Preston and one in Fulwood.
Okay.
Were you in the Fulwood one?
I was in the Fulwood one. Hence the 11 plus and coming under Lancashire County Council instead of Preston.
Okay.
That's how it worked at the time, yeah.
Right.
Sorry, interrupt. So, English Martyrs, you sat for the 11 plus?
Yeah.
And then was it a while later that you did the...
Yeah, a few weeks later we had to go to Fulwood. Okay. Secondary school, as it was, and sit it again. But it was... I've learnt since there was certain levels of allocation given to different... You know, Preston got so many places in... And Lancashire got so many others. It varied, so it depended. And they only took the top... So many then. Whether it's 100% true or not, that I can't verify. Mm. But you know, that's.
So how did you get into town to go to the Harris when at that time?
Oh, I had two choices. I could either catch a bus that came down Plungington and dropped me off by the Adelphi, or I could walk.
It's within walking distance, I guess, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I used to go home for my lunches.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, we got an hour then. I can't remember exactly. But I could walk home, have my lunch, and come back again. And similarly, when we was apprentices, there was a lad I got friendly with called Dave Sumner, and. He became a household friend of my mother's, because every Friday when we were doing their release, I used to jump on a motorbike and he'd be on the bike and down Brook Street and home.
So you'd bring your motorbike here, would you?
Oh yeah, parked it off Marsh Lane.
Yeah,
there was a car park there next to the workshops. Mechanical workshops were down there at the time.
Was that unusual, or were there a few of you with motorbikes?
Oh, no, it was specifically parking for motorbikes in that area. I mean, to say I had a small 250cc one that started off with at 18, I think. And then when I wanted a bigger bike, I found my legs weren't long enough to touch the floor, so I got a motorbike and sidecar. And everybody were having fun with the sidecar. They got up to some fun with that. Somebody else drove it out of the car park one day, and he'd never driven a motorbike from sidecar. And I can remember the sidecar wheel ended up running down the curb with a lamppost approaching. I'm on the back playing hell with him and telling him to switch it off.
Yes. So what did your family think about you going to the Harris?
Oh, it was, yeah. It was a testing time in many ways. My parents were, shall we say, old for their starting a family. My dad had been married before and his first wife had died. Didn't marry my mum till he was about 50. I came along when he was 52. I never knew his age until he had to retire, which was 65 in those days. And I'd just done the exam. He retired in May, beginning of May, with his 65th birthday. He took us all away on holiday for a week, which in them days was caravanning mainly and that sort of thing. He liked the outdoor life a bit. And then we came back, and that was when the letter was there. Passed. So it. I don't know how my mum did it, but yeah, she got the school uniform and everything else. And yeah, you know, all she had was his state pension.
Yeah. What did he do? What did your mum do?
He was commonly known as a tattler. They call them loom technicians now. And of course, the cotton industry was dying. The tech actually used to have some looms of their own, I've been told. I found that out later on. I became secretary of a local bowling club, and the treasurer, who was reasonably a bit older than me, Dennis Roberts, he ended up saying, well, I used to go there, but he'd been in the, I think he worked for Courtauld's. Okay. He'd been in the trade, and he used to go and learn how to weave and run machinery and that. Yeah.
So would your dad have done some sort of training at somewhere like the Harris, or just go straight into...
He did something. Because of his age, it was a little bit, you know, children should be seen and not heard was the term once quoted when he got a bit upset. But yeah, he talked about going to Blackburn.
Right.
Now, the East Lancs was the major weaving area. But he went to Blackburn on Saturday afternoons. And he walked there.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he'd no transport.
Wow.
I mean, to say he saw the first car arrive in Preston.
Yeah.
You know, they'd horse trams. But they only went round Preston to go to Blackburn, you know. You could have probably caught a train, I don't know, but I don't know whether he could afford to keep going back and forth. You know, it's a similar thing. My mother should have gone to, she wanted to go to Winkley Convent. She passed her 11 plus, but her family couldn't afford to get her a uniform, so she didn't go.
Oh.
It's as simple as that.
So you got your tuition fees paid for after passing the exam, but you didn't get anything for like uniform or
she must have got something, but she, you know, at 13, mums didn't discuss things like that with us, especially the fact that she was in her 40s by then.
Yeah.
You know, she was 16 years younger than my father, so it was a balance. One was born in the Victorian era, and the other one was. A bit later. It was hard in some ways, but I learnt various things. I used to take papers when I was 13 till I was 16. 6 days a week, morning and night. Now they think they've got their hard pushed if you take one, go out one time a day and, you know, and that was on top of doing the check and the homework. So,
Talking back about the actual classroom experience at the Harris Institute, did you think what were the facilities like?
They were better than what had come from. But I can probably take you back to the rooms if you're in the same building now, because it was on the bottom corner. I can remember they were building the Polytechnic while we were in class, and the problem was they were using jackhammers. You could feel the building start to show.
Was it quite different when it became a poly from being the college? I know you were doing like a different level of class by then.
Yeah, it carried on more or less the same. You got to a stage where you'd really started to grow up, and you'd been responsible, you know, and that was it. And the company made it very, very plain, you know. Like I said, you get a day release, but miss out any time, you're on night school, and if you choose not to go to night school, then, you know, you're stuck with whatever you achieve on the bench. You know, it was a good thing for me because I served my time at my request on a trade called metal spinning. And unfortunately, the bottom dropped out of the job a few years after I came out of my time. And I had to look at my family situation and everything else, like most people, there were a mortgage to pay and everything else. And what I'd learnt over that period of time then got applied and went up as assistant project engineer to run that side of it. And then gradually moved on to a number of places within the company. Like, you know.
So I was going to ask, what were your fellow pupils like?
I had an enjoyable time. Mm. Yeah. I just jotted some notes down here. Everybody acted reasonably all right. There were the odd daft times. I can remember a Miss Mellor, who unfortunately was rather a sensitive lady, some of the lads used to try and take the mickey a little bit. But there was one famous one was David Green. He lived somewhere up, I think, round Tardy Gate. So I only met him in school, but I ended up having to sit next to him at one stage or another. And when he asked permission, he was into chemistry, and he made a firework, an indoor firework, he said. And she said, she allowed him to light it. And I'm sat next to him, a bit like a desk like that, two in a desk. And the old pot ink wells, and he put it in one of these ink wells. And the thing's fizzing away and bubbling out. And all of a sudden, I saw Dave dive that way, and I thought, oh, and it bang! And she was shaking.
I feel a bit sorry for Miss Miller.
She used to. They knew damn well they could get away with it. She was a bit on the sensitive side, some of the lads had taken the mickey, like, you know.
And what was the discipline like then? Was she an exception?
There were exceptions. The ultimate thing was you didn't get caned or anything, you got expelled.
Right.
That was it. And I don't think anybody ever got expelled, but they got some severe reprimands occasionally, you know. I heard a tale, and had nothing to do with it, of three lads riding a bicycle down the ground floor corridor somewhere. Three abreast.
Wow.
But that occurred during lunch break, I believe. Having said that, sometimes some of the teachers got their own back on you. You know.
Did they?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Tookie was a great one for things like that. Yeah. He was teaching chemistry, and he also did the gym work and things. Jock Hulse as well. He's one of the famous names that everybody remembers. Mm. He was there to the bitter end, I think, of Jock. Yeah. But those two teachers took us to Soul Street swimming baths after school time. Mm-hmm. And that's when they got their own back here, because they actually joined us in the water, and we could lark about as good as the rest of them. I can remember going up onto the 5-metre diving board on the large plunge and having to jump off it to get out of the way of Jock Hulse.
Really?
Yeah.
But, when you were doing the at the TAC, was it a standard curriculum? Did everybody do the same set of subjects, or could you specialise to any extent?
I don't know whether it was run exactly the same as it or not. John Smith has talked to you, he's just had his 81st birthday. That puts him 4 years older than me. The implications were, when he came, there was a commercial section and a technical section. Mm. I never knew a commercial section while I was there.
Okay.
And the classes were mixed.
Okay.
Whereas when John went, they weren't. A lot of the girls used to go into the commercial side, and he only ever talked about one boy that he knew that went into the commercial side. They were all boys when John went. I turned up, I'd been in an all boys school for God knows how many years, and all of a sudden it's mixed classes, So
there were girls doing tech?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, There were certain times when they split us up into boys and girls, which was things like gym and sports. Mm-hmm. The girls didn't seem to do metalwork or woodwork, which we did. They went their separate ways then, so it was, the form was a joint thing, and for things like mathematics, English, geography, French, not my favourite subject that, Mr. Pomfrey didn't like me at the end of the day. I used to ask him what page we were on. I've never had a very strong leaning towards languages. I could do maths and science and everything else, but I could never handle languages well. I like the biology. I'll make it a bit simple here. I like to. Alright, I've got something here. Yeah. They taught us biology. I can't remember the name of that teacher. I know she was married. And I got very interested in it. And then they only taught us for the first year. And then the girls carried on the second year, and the lads went and did something different. That was it. But I did find it interesting. Yeah. One of them things. Yeah.
Did you do, I know you said you went swimming after school, swimming. Did you do any other things after school with your classmates?
No. We had a full afternoon for sports, which was down over Trambridge on the field at the side of the river there. It was mainly football and cricket and that. And if it was unfit to play, i.e. snow or something like that, the whole school used to go on a cross-country run. We started off at the same place, Harry's buildings on Avenham Street, through Avenham Park, over Trambridge, down Factory Lane, up Marshall's Brow to what was then Pemberton Railway Station, and then come back down the side of the railway line, which was a public footpath, across the old the old bridge over the river by the Bridge Inn, as it was, and back again through the park. A number of us was more interested in doing the cross-country running after that than playing football. And we actually did convince the teachers that every week we would give him a course we were going to run on. They used to come and check us occasionally. All of a sudden you see somebody there in the car And we'd go running. There was about seven or eight of us maybe that would go running instead of playing football. The object of it was to get round the course as fast as we could, because when you came back, you could get the clean water in the bath.
Right. Did you have a specific PE kit, like a uniform for PE?
Well, yeah, it was specified, I think. Yeah. Everything came from Helliwells, as I remember. I don't know, I might even have one of my old school caps, because one of the things with the boys anyway was you never wore your cap. If you did, you got a ducking.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know why, but that was it, yeah.
So if you did wear your cap?
Yeah, if you did wear your cap, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so you always had a cap on you if somebody wanted you to put it on, like, you know, in your pocket, but you never wore it deliberately.
Ah, okay. So we heard one story where somebody was at the bus stop,
yeah,
without the cap on, and one of the teachers saw
that. Yeah, that was John Smith.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just talking. So I suppose you didn't necessarily live near a lot of your classmates because they're coming in. Did you? Kind of after when you went back home, did you kind of still mix with the kids in the street? And
oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is a funny thing, you know. I went to English Martyrs from the age of 5 until I was 13. I can remember the names of some of them, but there's only the odd one that I ever became friendly with, because when I finished, I went back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the other lads and that were living right around the building.
Was there any kind of, I don't know, like the people where you lived, who were the similar age, was there any kind of standoffishness, sort of, because it was, you know, it was sort of quite a special thing coming to that,
I didn't feel anything like that. Mm. A lot of them, they've been there since, you know, forever,
yeah,
type of thing, but played with them as a child and grown up with them. There used to be a rivalry between different locations, especially on bonfire night, because you used to go around collecting wood. And one of the easiest ways of collecting wood is the old theft job. You go around and nick somebody else's when they're not looking, you know. And it could get serious, I suppose, but nobody ever seriously got hurt, I don't think, you know. It's not like today. There were no people running around with knives and everything else. If you got into a bit of a rupture about something or other, then you had a fisty fight. That was it. Yeah. You know, the area itself, it's difficult to try and explain to people. The area itself was right on the edge of Preston at the time. Lytham Road existed up to the railway bridge, and just beyond it, but a lot of the houses on the right-hand side of the road as you're going west didn't exist. The bungalows, they weren't there. It was grassland. I had a friend called Bill Lewis who lived on Mill Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And Mill Lane was a Sydney track.
Right.
And his dad owned the small holding between the brook and Cadley Causeway.
Okay.
It's now a playing field and and the rest of it's been built on. But you know, we were out in the country once we got out there. Bill had a donkey as a pet. My mother used to play hell about it. He'd come down with a flaming donkey in a flat trailer. And every time she opened the door, donkey tried to get in to get, well, he liked crusts of bread and things like that, you know. And my mother were only 4'10" and this thing's there with its head and everything. And the only truck behind it that stopped it going through the door, like, you know, couldn't get any further. And Bill wasn't the favourite subject, because Bill was, shall we say, pretty basic. He could swear like a trooper, and he's there cursing at the donkey and trying to get it to, yeah. That was, no. But they were good times.
Yeah.
It was all clean fun and, you know, yeah, and relaxing. holidays, as I said, you know. My dad had a friend who was a farmer at Cockram Sands, and we used to go up there for the fortnight. We didn't have a car, so my dad got a mate to drive us up there. Once we got there, that was it. Until his mate turned up a fortnight later, everything was out Shanky's pony. You walked everywhere on that. But we had the time of our life as children, me and my sister. Like, you know, it was safe paddling and swimming, and it was everybody helped in the farm if there were anything going on in those days. You know, but that was the life.
Did your sister go to the Harris?
No. No, hang on, where am I now? I think you're in the same
just
building. You're sat here in the same building as she used to work in.
Oh,
it used
really?
To be, was it Collins? Or it was a wholesale...
The books, is it? No. Askew?
No, not Askew's, no. It was fruit and veg and all that sort of thing.
Oh, really?
They now have a big place up opposite Red Scar Works, where Booths had their offices and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Collins was the name of the company, but it's the main trade name they used was Spar. But yeah, they functioned out of this building. She ended up, they weren't computers, they were called contometer operators. My dad, she went away on a course. I don't know who did the course, but she did a course for about 3 months, and he paid for that so that she could get the opportunity to come here. That's life.
So, what would you say would be your abiding memory of the Harris Institute? And the Polly?
And the Polly?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just somewhere I enjoyed. You know, you were treated completely differently to the previous schools. You were treated like a human being. You could have a bit of fun and that, but it was serious. When you had to learn, you were learnt. Jock Ulsh used to say, you'll learn 4 years in two. And he wasn't joking. It was graft. But, it was enjoyable in many ways. Yeah, finding all sorts of different things out. I mean, to say, my old school never did things like chemistry.
Right.
Mr. Turkey was there with his Bunsen burner and everything going on.
So was it the first time you did kind of science type subjects when you came in?
The one thing they used to have in English Martyrs was when I was seven, there was a Miss Turner, I always remember her, because she was into nature. And she taught natural history and things like that. And she started off every year with a glass tube, quite a large diameter, filled with different types of soil, different colours, and then she put a handful of worms in them. And you see how the worms worked. Every day you went in, you could see that it was mixing up a bit more. And it for 7-year-olds, it was interesting.
And you spent most of your working life at English Electric?
Started off at Stranraer. Spent 17 years there. Moved on from metal spinning to assistant project engineer. Then what something called a change engineer, which was handling... The RAF used to put modifications out that they wanted doing. And we had to try and get them on the aircraft before they left. So I worked with a team of people, some on the shop floor, and myself and a couple of others, and we wrote all the paperwork out and got the team to do whatever they wanted. We managed to do that with only about one major mistake. It's one of those things. Then I went from there to engineering release group at Wharton. I did 22 years at Wharton. I also got involved with the union on health and safety. And the last 10 years of my life there was as a health and safety advisor for a building with 300 odd people in.
Nice.
So, I get a bit of fun now and again with that. Especially when things start coming through the roof.
Dear.
Yeah.
So you moved quite away from where you started, but
yeah,
could you say it was what you studied here that set you on the way?
Everything by the health and safety was what I'd learnt.
Yeah.
You know, the other week we went round the engineering block, and of course, it's completely different now. I mean, I worked on a centre lathe as a metal spinner, which is basically a headstock, a tailstock, and whatever rotates in between where you put in. Those machineries, you can't tell what's inside them, because health and safety wise, you put whacking great guards around them now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, to say I learnt, one thing I can remember was the numerical control machines coming in at Strang Road.
Okay.
And I'd learnt in here about certain machining options and things like that. And then I went down on the shop floor, and one day, and one of the foremen I dealt with, he's scratching his head out, like, you know, he can't work out why things aren't right. They started on Jaguar by building wing skins out of solid metal, whereas previously they'd been folded metal and riveted on that. The idea was to produce a smoother surface with less wind interference and everything else. But the problem was, they start off with a billet about 4 inches thick, quite a fair size, and they'd shape the outer contour of the wing, which was a small amount of metal off the surface, then turn it over and machine masses of metal away so that it left a rib every so far to stiffen it up and make it strong. But the problem was, they were doing it in one go, and then every time they unclamped it off the table, the thing went like that.
Oh.
Because you take that much out of one side, you just stress relieved itself.
Yeah.
And bent. And he couldn't get it within about 25 thousandths of an inch. And I turned around and said, well, he can file to 10. Of course, which didn't exactly enamour him to me. But then I started saying what I'd learnt, and we don't do it like that, you know. And the concept was, you put it on an old machine, which has probably a certain amount of wear and tear on the bearings, rough it out, let it stress relieve itself, then put it on a second or even a third machine to do a final cut, and it's stress relieving itself all the way through, so you get it accurate, and it'll stay within the dimensions. It was comical about that. They were scratching their heads all over the place. They even got to, what was it called, shop peening. I don't know if they know anything about that. It's basically a form of, like sandblasting. You blast out of a nozzle onto the metal under pressure on that, but instead of sand, it's small ball bearings. So it's literally like hitting somebody beating the thing with a ball bearing hammer all over the place, but it's done very fast. Right? And that was the way they were straightening them up to get them right, to right size.
And what's that technique called, sorry? Shop?
Shop beaning.
Oh.
P-E-E-N-I-N-G.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not heard of that one.
No, it's not used too often. It's a bit like metal spinning, you never hear of that anymore.
What did that involve?
You put a sheet of a circular piece of sheet metal or something like that into a lathe and folded it round a template.
Yeah.
You know, what you're going to do? Use a pan tonight. Well, how do you get that shape for your pan?
Okay.
That's a simple thing. It's a pan, you know.
Okay.
But we were making parts in those days for Canberra Lightning. We did TSR2, and we also produced stuff for the English Electric Deltic. And because we were English Electric, we did everything. And then when GEC took over, they took the work away from us. That was one of the reasons why the job started dropping off. There were only four of us in the whole of the factory.
Okay.
Did they take that work abroad, or did they just do it somewhere else in England?
They changed it. They changed things completely. In those days, there was a major difference in what you could do. A lot of the things that we spun could be pressed.
Right.
With press tools. But in those days, the aircraft orders were relatively small. So it wasn't mass production.
Right.
And if you're going to produce press tools, they're expensive to make.
Yeah.
Whereas metal spinning, you could knock it up on a... Well, they originally started out, I believe, using tree trunks and shaping tree trunks of the shape they wanted, and then we used metal because tree trunks were after a time. But, the funniest thing I ever did was make some gongs for Hong Kong trams. English Electric used to make trams, and we still had a tool in stores, yeah.
Wow.
That were a beast, that. It, it was something like 1/8 inch thick plate, and we had to roll it into that dome shape that you get from the foot bells.
Excellent.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us that we've not talked about so far?
Not really. No. Not unless you can tell me something of where all these people have gone that I've never seen.
It'd be interesting to find out, or maybe contact some of the teachers' offspring, as it were, and get them, meet them and find out what they heard about there.
I don't know whether Jock Hulse ever had any children or not, but... that would be interesting, because he did claim at one stage that he was also responsible for the design of the Bond Mini, which was built originally at Preston. And it, I don't know, I have a lad that I used to work with who I bump into occasionally. John Smith has a customs classic car. I go with him to these shows, and I bumped into this fellow again after I've retired, and he's there with Bond Minis. He's got four or five of them, and he does them up and things like that, you know. And then he turned up one that day with a motorised bicycle. The Bond Minis started out with a 175cc engine that was a Villiers engine for a motorbike.
Okay.
And you didn't need a reverse, so you could drive one with the motorbike license.
Oh.
And that the whole engine and drove the front wheel, and it was on basically like a turntable. And so you just, when you wanted to turn round, you just turned the wheel hard over, and it spun round in its own distance.
Oh.
It's just.
But,
it'd be really handy now, wouldn't it, with everywhere being so busy.
But the early ones, you had to lift the bonnet up and use the kickstart on the engine to start it. And a 175cc motorbike engine didn't go very fast when it had a larger body on it and two people in.
Any more questions?
I don't think so. Thanks very much, Peter.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
I've rambled a bit, but yeah.
It's all good.
Very
stuff.
Interesting, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the coffee and sorry for spilling it.